You are listening to Legion of Substitute Podcasters, episode 374, The Universal Project, Chapter 1, Forgotten Heroes. And welcome to episode 374 of Legion of Substitute Podcasters. I am Paul French, and today I am Christmas Tree Kid. Today was that day.
Matt was that 2 months ago.
Well, of course. Kramer Christmas starts much earlier.
True.
But yes, went out, got the tree, then had to deal with the kids asking every 5 minutes, can we decorate it now? No, we're letting the tree settle first. You know, you'll notice it is very skinny at the moment. Those branches need to settle.
They need to bush out a little bit, don't they?
Yeah, and so I'd finish explaining that, and then it was, how about now?
They're excited.
Seriously? Oh, totally excited. To the point, you know, I mean, I had to, it was all about the little spire part at the top, you know? Because you got to have something decent to put the star on, and so I chose sort of the, you know, our ceilings aren't that high, so you know, 6 foot is probably a good way to go. Mm-hmm. And I was very careful of making sure that particular spire was good. And then Jen's looking at it and she's like, I think that goes up a little too high. And so then she goes and folds it down and puts the star on. It's like, come on. But Christmas tree is decorated.
Yay.
Hands washed of it. Well, literally, because, you know, the tree sap.
Well, that sap. Yeah. Totally.
But it's done.
Well, good for you.
It's beginning to look a lot like, you know, that time of year. Over to you, sir.
Okay. I am Darren Noel, and I had a Christmas party last night, and I nearly burned down my house, kid. There you go. Let me explain. So I had people over for my holiday party because, you know, I likes to party. And I was going to try cooking something new. And I went out last minute to find the correct implement of cooking for this, and I couldn't find a bundt pan to save my life. There was no bundt pan to be had. And so Darren thinks, well, I'll use an angel, you know, food cake pan. It's the same size, right? Well, there's a very interesting structural difference between the two, because this was a springform loaded, which meant the bottom was not sealed.
Yes. All the way.
And unlike a bundt cake, which is like all metal all around, you know, the bottom, right?
Yep.
So I put all the stuff in there. There's you know, butter, there's sugar in this, there's chocolate chips. It's a sweet confection type of thing. I throw it in the oven. 5 minutes later, my loft is full of smoke.
Because
the sugar had dripped through the springform pan in the little crevice and went down to the bottom of the oven, which, of course, was creating caramel, but very, very dark caramel. I would not eat it if I were you. So I had to open all the windows and turn on the fans and turn on the AC unit while people were here. This was baking while I had about 25 people here.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a good time. So in order to solve the problem, we grabbed the monkey bread out of the oven and threw it in the shower.
Oh, dear.
Now, I had a lot to drink last night. I've been mainlining water all day.
Yes.
And so this morning when I went to go take a shower, I'm like, why are my feet sticky? Oh, the monkey bread's in here still.
You know, I did catch the sticky feet thing on Facebook, but I didn't see the whole thing.
Yes.
Yes.
I threw the monkey in the shower, and people think that that's a euphemism for something. No, I threw the monkey in the shower.
So we're not talking about Scott, right? Talking-
No, I would never throw Filthy McMonkey into a shower because then his nickname would be ruined. He would no longer be Filthy.
This is true.
He would be Clean McMonkey. And Scott is many things. Clean, not one of them.
Orange.
Oh, he's very orange. He's a squirrel nest at times. So yes. There are all kinds of things Scott is, but clean? No. And I mean that in the figurative sense.
Yes.
He does bathe once in a while. But, you know, it was a good thing that I opened the windows. It was 75 degrees at night here, Fahrenheit. I know that doesn't mean anything to you Canadians.
Carry the one.
It's really, really warm here for Christmas. I was in shorts the other day outside.
Nice.
Except it doesn't feel like Christmas. I like it to get cold for Christmas, and then I like it to heat back up again.
I was just gonna say, from December 23rd to the 26th, have at it.
Thank you. From December 20th through like my birthday, like early February, it should be cold. Yeah, winter is a thing. We should have at least a month of it. Yeah. Not so far, and I hope I am jinxing us, because I really want a week off of work. I really need a snowpocalypse.
Snowmageddon.
Snowmageddon. Woohoo!
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my wonderful weekend. Woohoo. Party on.
No, there you go.
Indeed.
Nice. Sir, we have a guest with us today.
Yay for guests.
So we've had to, you know, clean up the headquarters a little bit. And a little bit. And you know, at least get the monkey stuff out of the
monkey feces. Yes, please.
And wait, what does that mean now? So, Thomas, why don't you introduce yourself?
All right. Hello, everyone. I am Thomas Lanise, and tonight I will be Sorcerer's Apprentice Lad.
Nice.
Yeah, very good, right? So the reason being is that a longtime fan of the Legion of Substitute Podcasters, I've decided to dip my own feet into the podcasting world with one focused on the supernatural characters of the DC Universe. That's the sorcerer side. The apprentice side is because, peek behind the curtains, for the past hour or so, Darren and Paul have been kind enough to be giving me basically a tutorial as a neophyte podcaster into the world of recording and hosting and such things. And mucho obligado, good gentlemen.
Mostly Paul, folks. Mostly Paul.
Darren cracks wise every now and then.
Yeah, let's just be clear about that. The technical side is Paul.
But yeah, that's no, and so yeah, excited for when your show starts, and looking forward to helping you get that rolling, because that's exciting. It's stuff we all enjoy a great deal.
Thanks.
And and I know a lot of other people who really enjoy the whole topic that you're going to be covering, and so I think it's going to be really exciting for a lot of people.
Great.
Cool. So, Legion news, Darren.
Yes, I don't have any. Do you?
Closest I've got is my daughter wanted to watch Legion of Superheroes this morning.
Okay.
So there you go. So yes, there you go. She watched the yes, in Legion news today, my daughter watched the first season of the first volume of Legion of Superheroes, and has now decided, whereas before her favorite episode was the first one, because she got to see the whole thing with Clark. Mm-hmm. And she really enjoyed that part of it, like him seeing the Superman museum, the whole bit. Mm-hmm. But now she's all about the Timberwolf episode
because he's furry.
I am in so much trouble.
You are, because she's gonna wind up dating a rocker. Yeah, that's all there is to that.
So yeah. So
I thought you were gonna say in Legion news, General Francisco Franco is still
yes, and as it turns out, he is.
Yeah, it's true. Not a lie.
And actually, she and I also got caught up on Supergirl this morning.
Sweet.
And my little girl, my little six-year-old, has turned into one of those people who yells at the TV when people don't do stuff they're supposed to.
That a girl.
So in one episode, she was yelling at General Lane, saying, "That's your fault. That's your fault. You did that." And
I love her.
That's awesome.
Stupid characters doing stupid things on stupid TV.
And here's the other thing. This thing happens in the show, and she's like, "Why aren't they calling Superman?" My daughter has become the internet.
Alleged.
Oh, no.
one. There is no spoon.
She's like, why don't they just call Superman? Why don't they?
Well, isn't that a problem with all super? That's you know the suspension of disbelief that we all deal with when we
totally.
Is we know there are ways to fix anything that Batman is going through, and it is to call Superman. Why can't I get this? Why can't I race my Batmobile over to both locations at the same time to see which bomb I can deactivate first? I could call the Flash. Suspend the disbelief, kids. You'll be much happier.
Exactly, but she's six, and it's enough for the. So this isn't real, right?
That's correct.
Yes. So it was like, okay, so look, here's when Supergirl and the Flash were on the same show, showing her some Glee clips, and it's like, you see, no superpowers there. She's a person who plays the character. So,
true.
So she's getting that now, because that, and then she's also, you know, why is Flash's dad? I thought that Flash's dad used to be the Flash. And
technically,
she's seen the old Flash. From
oh yeah,
the, oh, oh yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, wow. Yes, yeah.
Come
yeah.
on. And that child has no hope. She
yeah, oh yeah,
done.
Yeah, done.
It's done.
You know, it's one of my favorite things is sitting watching the Adam West Batman series with her, because it was like, I watched this with my dad when I was her age, and it was all over for me then as well. Anyway, so we're getting into a big story arc.
Yep. It's been a while since we've had, I guess, the Sensor Girl thing, kind of, or the Fatal Five thing.
Sure, but here's the difference.
Last one.
But here's the difference. They didn't get a fancy little trade banner.
No, they did not.
Yeah, there's fancy trade dress on this. On this issue, we have the big black band over the logo that says the Universal Project Chapter One.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they run that all the way through. Consistent trade dress. It's design. Mm-hmm. This was, we were talking about Richard Bruning last week. This is he.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something that he brought to it, and you know what? That actually reminds me of a bit of feedback before we get into this.
Okay. This cover design kind of reminded me of how Titans handled the Judas contract as well.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and so you know, but you know, and this was a there was very much a big design sense from Richard Bruning when he was working with the company was the stuff that all the sort of designy stuff, like all the Vertigo branding when they first launched, that was him. Mm. And you know, you could stand across the room and you could pick out a Vertigo cover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't have to see the detail. You just knew that it was a Vertigo cover. That is successful design.
Truth.
Okay, so I just want to our good friend Mark Sweeney last week had mentioned you know, he had mentioned, you know, did we ever see the In My Opinion, and so he mentioned this for Richard Bruning, and one thing I didn't know is that he actually wrote an Adam Strange Prestige miniseries that I now need to find. I love the character, and I'm just, you know, I like this guy's artistic sense. So, I think there's something I'm going to like about this. He mentions that that probably he was in the planning stages of that when he wrote the column in that was inside on the inside cover of issue 31. And he said, my favorite things Bruning ever did were those really great covers for Sandman Mystery Theater that he collaborated on. They were always interestingly designed. Another thing he said, he loved our discussion of fill-in artists. Reading books back in the day was often disappointed when a fill-in artist would do a story, and always made me appreciate more the work of guys like Joe Staton and Greg LaRocque, who weren't the flashiest artists, but gave books long, consistent runs. And then he mentions that he thought the best handling of fill-ins was done by James Robinson and company on Starman, because the stories were occasionally inserted to give the artists a break, you know, but it was always an in-story reason for doing that little switch up.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, so thanks for that, Mark. And so yeah, we end up with another in my opinion. And one of the things she talks about is just, you know, what comics do, and it's, you know, right on to what we were just talking about with my daughter starting to get into this stuff. Is you know, what does this mean for, you know, are there comics for girls too?
Uh-huh. And there are.
Well, absolutely. They're the same ones.
They are.
and so this was written by Julia Sabag? Saba? I don't know. I don't know how you... S-A-B-B-A-G-H. Pronounce it how you will. Some of you may even pronounce it correctly. So she just talks about, and you know, again, these in my opinions, they're topics people are still talking about today.
Yep.
This book came out 28 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. in other news, this comic came out 28 years ago.
In other news, we're old. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that.
So she mentions about just the whole talk about what comics do for boys. She says they provide visual stimulation. They're wonderful sources for imagination. They present heroes for role models. They channel aggression. They make you think.
Mm-hmm.
She says this is all important stuff to a child's development, stuff I wouldn't want my little girl to miss out on. So let her read the comics that are out there, you might say. Well, they aren't quite meant for girls. Oh, really? She says much of the visual stimulation in comics involves a lot of fighting, and girls do not relate to it as well as they relate to talking, planning, and thinking. Boys admire total invincibility in a role model, whereas girls attach themselves to heroes with more emotion and compassion. The continuity in comics also... serves to alienate girls who prefer the richness of fantasy without the excess accumulation of data.
Uh-huh.
She says, I've briefly touched upon the differences comic writers should be aware of if they are to write for girls. The early development of girls has changed now that society encourages and accepts that women are achievers. Girls are looking for examples in society which support their growth potential. If we want comics to be read by girls, we must present them with the proper visual and imaginative energy they need to grow on. Give them stories which won't diminish their future roles in life, but instead will establish a base on which they can develop their own imagination and personalities. Stories which support the fact that they can achieve whatever they want out of life. So, I don't know.
Hey, we're having the same discussions today.
So. Yeah. You know, but you know, whereas a lot of people are saying, no, there's no difference between what I want to read and what you say, you know, I think a lot of the people who are having that discussion would argue with this, saying that, you know, it's the old thing about the Lego for girls, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where they said the whole thing was that they did this research and so they created the Lego Friends line, lots of purple, lots of pink, female characters, you know, the whole. All these different things, and it's turned into like a big entertainment franchise as well. And so people say, well, you know, all they needed to do was like give a little wig with a ponytail for the astronaut character.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. That was what they said. See, you could have saved yourself all this. But the thing is that Lego Friends line is as successful as it gets for Lego.
Mm-hmm.
Like true. That stuff sells like crazy, and I only became aware of it really because my kid loves it, because anything purple and pink, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, there's some stuff that does get just socialized, right? But you know, the argument becomes challenging, and I welcome anyone to email in. Let us know your thoughts on this, seriously. Because there's always the, we don't need anything different. Don't condescend to us. Don't make something that's different just for us. And yet when they do something like that, it does well. Now,
well, I think that's also marketing.
Yeah. Know your market and do something that they want. On the other side of it, I also think that there's a I don't know that it's always the same group. There is a subset that's going to say the stuff you've got is fine. I enjoy it too. Just don't do stuff, you know. And I mean, this storyline that we're getting into actually is a great example of a writer who did it right.
Yep.
Right?
It's a strong female story from the get-go.
Holy crap, is it ever. And so to me, you know, actually, that was kind of a well-placed thing in the cover of this book, because, you know, the Legion does require the accumulation of data in a big way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is a pretty strong continuity no matter what version of it you read, because, you know, they all built it very, very quickly. And, although having said that, they kind of, when they became in Three Boot, when it became Supergirl in the Legion, it,
eat it, Grandpa.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of the other stuff kind of fell away. It was like, let's not focus too much on what's gone before. Mm-hmm. Let's live in the now. And I wonder if that was part of the reasoning behind it.
Probably.
I don't know. I think that gives them a little too much credit.
well, maybe.
You know, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about the whole thing with female-led superhero stuff, mm-hmm. right?
True.
I think the success of on both sides of both Jessica Jones and Supergirl, I think it's going to change it somewhat.
Yeah, I would hope so.
I think they're going to be like, oh, you can do stuff that targets women. And
well, we tend to go through the ebb and flow of this. I mean, in the 70s, it was Wonder Woman, the Bionic Woman.
Yeah.
Even Charlie's Angels to some extent. I mean, it wasn't. I mean, Jiggle TV was really big back then, but still, it was females taking an action role in a show and being the leads, mm-hmm. and people going to it. In the 80s, it kind of went away for a little bit, but then we got Buffy and Xena.
Yeah.
In the 90s and the 2000s. So, and you couldn't have asked for two more kick-ass women.
Yeah,
In those roles. And of course Star Trek's done a lot with putting forth strong female characters as well, but it doesn't seem to stay.
Okay,
it seems to be a cycle that.
But you mentioned
for a little bit and then it goes away. So
see, that's interesting. You mentioned Buffy and Xena, and in this it's like, well, it's the fighting. They don't like the fighting. I know a lot of women who really quite like the fighting. And
exactly. I know women who are black belts. So
well, this is true. This is true. Yeah, I just find it interesting that once again we're looking at topics that have been discussed, that were discussed 28 years ago and are still being discussed today. And I don't know what, now with the exception last month's dealt with a lot of the changing formats, and some of that did come to pass, but that we're still having the same conversations and it doesn't seem that much progress has been made.
Well, I think it's a lot of push and pull. Honestly,
yeah, it's that ebb and flow, like you talked about.
I think a lot of, I mean, you can look at Phil Jimenez's Wonder Woman, Rucka's, and Gail Simone, obviously her run on Wonder Woman, and then before that her run on Birds of Prey. There's a lot of really strong female characters in comics who just don't get a big enough platform for a long period of time, and so it's hard to get that readership and that following going, because as we've discussed before, if you're not selling a book successfully within a year, you're off the book and there's a new person or the book's canceled. So
playing the long game is a challenge.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, when they came out with the new 52, it's like, voodoo, really? Ugh. You know what I'm saying? I'm like,
sounding endorsement for a female character, but
but I'm like, who? And I knew who she was. I'm saying that ironically. It's like, if you're going to put characters out there with the headline of this is their name, they need to kind of be household.
Yeah,
true. At the get-go when you're starting your franchise up again. And I think they missed a lot of opportunity there.
Well, and I think also, you know, I mean, if you're going to try and break a newer character, and yeah, I know Voodoo had been around for a long time, but you know what?
But no one knows her.
Yeah, and the Wildcats book was not really targeted to females ever, right? But
T&A, darling.
Yeah. But this actually, yesterday morning, one of the things that happened is Ella was looking at the bookcase in the basement, and she picked out the Huntress trade, which is the Dark Knight Detective, and
Dark Knight Daughter.
Dark Knight, you're right. So she grabbed that out, and she was like, "Daddy, this looks cool." And so she was asking me about it, and I was explaining the whole thing about. So I was explaining Earth 2, and it was just like, you know, the old, "Oh, multiple Earths is so confusing." I said to her, "So there's a different Earth where there's, you know, where Batman was older and he married Catwoman." And she's like, "He married Catwoman?" Like she's like, "Other Earth? Yeah, okay, whatever." You know, it's like,
no she's problem. On that now. Yeah. She's just like there.
And as
you say, she's already aware that on an alternate Earth, Supergirl and Flash attend a glee club in high school.
That's right. Yes, exactly. See, and so you know, she's already prepared for this, right? And she's looking and she's like, you know, "Daddy, she's wearing Batman's cape."
Uh huh.
That's the part she noticed about the Huntress's costume. "Daddy, she's wearing Batman's cape."
How dare she rip that off?
No, she was like, "That's awesome."
It is awesome.
Oh yeah, and so we're gonna actually do sort of an edited read. I think most of it is pretty safe. God knows,
I would think so.
I was reading it at 8, but you know, it's so I'm just gonna kind of go through it and just make sure. I don't think most of it's going to be disturbing, because I already told her that you know, Batman and Catwoman, you're not going to see much of them in this book. No. And so she's on board with this, and so yeah, the Huntress to her is really cool, and you know, because she just likes that kind of stuff, and I think that so at some point you also got to remember that it's like, everyone's not a monolith. Not all boys like the same stuff too. Uh-huh. Not all girls like the same stuff. And,
that's true too.
And sometimes that taste is a wide ranging thing, you know, where for her it's like, yeah, I like watching My Little Pony, and now I want to see Batman kick some butt.
Yeah, why can't you like both?
Exactly. So, turns out people can have wide range.
Well, that's what I hate about marketing. I really despise marketing, because they think everyone thinks the same thing.
It's a monolith, yeah.
Yeah, and that is so not the case. People's tastes are much more dynamic than that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I watch a lot of sci-fi, and I watch a lot of fantasy. I watch a lot of superhero, but I also watch news channels.
Yep.
You know, I try to stay up on my current events. I try to be informed. And I watch, you know, how to repair things in your home shows, because I have a home. You know, it's not just, oh, they're nerds, and that's all there is.
Yeah.
And that's a really short-sighted way of thinking about marketing to people. So,
absolutely. All right, let's get into this.
Quick, please. You know, before you depart from the In My Opinion page, I want to earn my keep a little bit here. And you're talking about, you know, the amassing of knowledge regarding the Legion. So if you look in the checklist there off to the left-hand side, obviously you see this month's Legion number 32. But then all the way at the top, there's a little something called the History of DC Universe Portfolio.
Oh,
all right.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm not sure
such
if you know.
Such a pretty book.
Oh, you know it. Great. So yeah, basically what it was, you know, on the heels of the history of the DC Universe, 10 dynamic plates depicting visual moments in DC history. And just as Darren says, a gorgeous collection from artists across the field. It was basically Camelot 3000 by Brian Bolland. You had a Dr. Fate by Keith Giffen. Jonah Hex by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, Superman by Kurt Swan and Jerry Ordway, Batman by Dick Giordano, Wonder Woman by George Perez, Swamp Thing by Steve Bissett and John Totleman. I'm not sure what this is. The Freaks by John Byrne. That may be a project that never came into fruition. But most importantly, Plate 10 is a beautiful plate, Legion of Superheroes by one Steve Lytle. And it, so I'm taking a look at it now, and I'll send you the link across if you want to add to your show notes.
Please.
But definitely shows a Legion in flux. And I'm placing maybe this, maybe post-Universo project, because it does show Saturn Girl as part of the team. So, you know, there's no Garth, no...
Now, I think a part of that could have even also been the fact that they kind of knew that's where they were going with it in the next few months, and and maybe that kind of telegraphed it, and so they were all spoilery.
They're all spoilery.
So, but the plates, it sounds like it was a pretty cool thing.
Oh, beautiful.
See, that's something I would love to see.
And like I say, I'll show you over the link, and if you like, you guys can stick it in the show notes or whatnot.
Very nice, very nice. All right, so we get into the issue proper. It is 2986 AD.
Like it is.
Yes, just so you know that this doesn't take place 3,000 years before the birth of Christ. So I'm just looking here. So cover date is March 87. Now, let's keep in mind that, that we were looking...
That
we were
would talking, be December 86, would it not?
Yeah, because remember we were talking about the timeline and sort of looking at the way... Now, I am going by the way it was explained. You know, I got to put on maybe the link, other link into the show notes as well. It's a great link that Michael shared last week about the various timelines. But at any rate, this kind of lasted through to about April of 2987.
Oh yeah. And they kind of handled it well because no one knows exactly how long anyone's been asleep at this point.
So. Yeah, that's exactly. Right. Exactly. So we see this, sort of large cell with a whole bunch of bunks in it. And, Saturn Girl is in a purplish gray outfit, and she's waking up and she realizes that Garth isn't there, and wonders where the heck she is and realizes it's some sort of barracks, definitely not home or anywhere I've been before, which means I'm in serious trouble. And she looks and she sees that her flight ring is gone, and someone comes up to her and says, "Everyone else is already busy. You're very late. We must go to the fields." She says, "Fields? What fields? And who are you?" And she says that she's her friend. We're all your friends. And she goes out and this kind of reminds me a bit of the Super Stalag of Space. Which is a great callback as well.
Well, this also reminds me of the great 1960s series The Prisoner.
So which, and around this time, wasn't there a Prisoner adaptation?
Yeah, I think there was an adaptation.
Yeah, it wasn't far off this, was it? She is trying to get sort of frame herself into reality. And so she says, "I'm Imradine Rans, Saturn Girl, born on Titan. I live on Earth. My husband is Garth. My sons are Graham and Val."
Hmm. Isn't that interesting that Validus is now Val? It's remember when Graham was born, it was right during that whole LSH LSV fight.
Right.
And now it seems like they've named that twin after Karate Kid.
Yeah, because
I was just thinking a truncation of Validus, but
well it is, but yeah, now it seems like
almost a tribute. Yeah.
Almost a tribute.
So but when did the name Garridan first come into the vernacular? Because of
I think that was in 5 years later.
5 years later, yeah.
I think. Yeah. When they had to rename him.
Isn't that interesting?
Because I think they called it the Validus plague, didn't they? So you didn't want the kid causing it to be called Validus.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like we were gonna rename him.
But I'd never thought of that. I just assumed that Graham and Garridan had been sort of the names used all the time. But of course, they would have had no reason to name Garridan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very interesting. She says, I don't understand what you're saying. We should go to the fields now. Like, lady, don't mess things up. And so she checks in her mind and she says she's completely mind blocked and controlled. But how? She says, I can feel the same blocks in my mind, but they're broken. I must have been brought here under their influence and then broken them subconsciously thanks to my powers, which still doesn't tell me where here is. She sees Dream Girl and says, thank the stars, at least there's another Legionnaire here as well. And Dreamy's got her water jug filled. Do you have yours? We should go to the fields now. And she's, it's under the same blocks.
Uh-huh.
So on Earth, the so-called Motherworld, seat of the United Planets Council, noted for its many treasures and wonders, and until today, headquarters of the Legion of Superheroes. Until today, because they're taking the logo off the building. Much like when Ultra Boy was in trouble, removing the symbol from his bossy chest is the best way to take away. That's what it really is. And it's Officer Aaron telling them to take down the logo.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's when you're like, what the what?
Yeah, she says, we want to shut it down without damaging the building. It's government property. And then they put up a scroll piece of paper in the 30th century.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, really? Why isn't that on a hologram somewhere?
Yeah, good. Then by order of the President of Earth, the Legion of Superheroes headquarters is closed permanently. Well, we'll see, won't we?
We shall.
Yeah, so back to the fields. We've got one alien, kind of looks Tomer Ray-ish, doesn't he?
Yeah, Zudari.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Fruits, please give me your fruits, friends. I will bring them to the eating place.
The
eating place. And, and so she's pulling these saying, I never thought the time Garth and I spent on that commune on Wyneth would prove useful. And, then this guy with the fiery hair says, I'll help you out. And she says, hey, where are you going? He says, I go to eating place now. And she checks for the mind block, and yes, it's there. And then she sees Brainy and Cam. Can't pick up any thoughts from them either. She says, if everyone on this stupid farm but me is mind blocked, I'll have to get myself out of here, and there's no time like the present to start. She starts walking away, and one of the guys says, do not leave. We belong in the fields now. Yeah. And she's had enough of this. She's out. And she sees a spy eye following her. She says, this place isn't as serene and pastoral as it pretends to be. And so she picks up a rock and throws it at the little Skeets-looking thing. And it gets
out. What if it is Skeets? Total Morrison moment here.
Damn.
52, baby. 52.
Wait, is Mr. Mind in there?
I don't know.
Oh, spoilers for 52. So she says, not only is it not Earth or Titan, it's not any place I've ever been, and that's a long list of worlds. And she sees three moons rising over the sea, which is a sea of sulfur. She says, with only one island in sight, this one. No sign of a way off the island or of our keepers. Just a mob of mind-blocked people working the fields to stay alive. She says, besides the other Legionnaires, I recognized a few of the other prisoners. Gas Girl of Lalor, a Green Lantern from Zudar, and I think there were a few science police officers too. But why us? And especially, why only us four of all the Legionnaires? I'm not even an active member anymore. But that does... Being an active member now isn't what matters.
Yep.
She says, I'm sure Garth and the others are searching for us if they can, but there's no point in waiting for them. So she kind of, you know, she's kind of mapping stuff out, and she says, look at the map and think. There's always a way. The fountain and the pond, they can't be fed by the sulfur seas because they're real water. That's it. So at night, the spy eye flies over, she says, it's gone. I have lots of time before it flies over again based on the pattern I observed. And so off she goes. And she figures everybody else is basically programmed to go to sleep basically to stay asleep. Uh-huh. It's kind of shut down, as she says, shut down at a specific time. And she says, can't think about that, especially not about how long I may have been under the same blocks. So she says, keep thinking of getting these people out of here, out of the prison someone's made of their minds. And she sees the fountain, knowing that it's the only source of fresh water on the whole island, maybe the planet. So she dives in. Literally. Yep. And and makes her way down. And glub, glub, indeed.
Oh, what a beautiful panel. You were talking before about when the inks really work. I think
right? This picture here it's stunning. So it's stunning. And yeah, no, I think DiCarlo and LaRocque are a great mix. I really do. And you know, that was a good pairing for sure. So we get into space within the Dominator's territory. This is, of course, Block, Ultra Boy, and Mon-El have been sent off with Ambassador Relnik. And so they're on communication silence, and one of the...
Be very, very quiet. We're hunting Dominators.
Yeah. Exactly, and so Sulu says he's monitoring all the frequencies and detects no leakage from the Star Cruiser, and nor does Mon-El with his super hearing. And Ultra Boy says, if Mon-El can't hear anything, you know it's quiet out here. And Relnik is wondering why it's so silent. He says, I hope not as a result of a plot by the Dominators to disrupt our diplomatic mission. Block asks, were we not invited so you might extend the UP Dominator Treaty, sir? He says, yes, but they could have had an ulterior motive. And, you know, Block, you humans are strange. I do not understand. Mon-El says, maybe I should fly back to Earth and see what's going on, or at least to UP territory. Or should I go on ahead of the cruiser and make sure the Dominators aren't planning any nasty surprises? And Relnik shuts it down by saying, I appreciate the offer, but I prefer to have you close by. We must try to make this mission succeed, and for the moment, that means we must forget whatever is occurring on Earth. Yes, isn't that convenient?
Very convenient.
Yeah. I'm like, hey, those are the orders. That's what we got to do. And they realize the Dominators have arrived. Yes, they're the penis ships.
There they are again.
Yeah, and so big tough warships. And he says, I suppose it could be an armed escort, could they not? And he says, maybe, but if they're not an escort, Block, then they're about to find out exactly how mad a Legionnaire can get when he's tricked. And as we know, not super tough tricking Ultra Boy.
Hey.
Back to the fields.
Oi, you. Oi.
Saturn Go is feeling awful, and she is upset that she couldn't hold her breath long enough to find the fountain's source. And she gets zapped by one of the spy eyes. And she says, they're watching me very closely, but why aren't they sending me in for reprogramming?
As John Arbuckle watches her from the background.
Oh, my God, yes. Wow.
He's missing his cat.
Exactly. He just doesn't know. Well, you know, it's that whole cartoon where that whole version where you realize that Garfield isn't really there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so depressing. Oh, my God. Also, next to John, it looks like that could be Flair from the Fatal Five.
Oh, interesting.
Hmm.
Although, I don't know why she would be here, but it certainly reminds me of her. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And then the ones in the panel down below, that's Colossus and Kitty Pryde in a heartbeat. So.
Oh, really? With the Domino mask, I was thinking Denny Colt, the spirit.
But that's definitely not, what's his name?
It just reminds me of Colossus and Kitty. Yeah, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I can see that. And that would have been, you know, a thing not long before this. So, anyway, so she says, maybe they just think that I fell in, or my blocks are weakening. And she says, well, the more they underestimate me, the easier it'll be for me to get off this world. And so nightfall comes again, and She sees the, again, sees the spy eye move away, and she says, "With luck, our keepers have decided I'm going to bed in the barracks like a good girl tonight. If they think I can be beaten that easily, I've won half my battle already." And so she's going to lie down, rest tonight, and pull herself together, finish working out her new plan. She says, "It's time to get out of here and find Garth and my boys. Then come back and burn this damn planet down around the ears of whoever put me here." Yep. Hell hath no fury.
Yep.
Off to Hycraeus. Ah, glorious Mother Ocean.
That mud ball.
Yeah. So they're swimming through and they're trying to find Tellus and... they're trying to find Atmos and trying to get to that area. And they're told... "It lies beyond the next ridge. Please be patient. I know how vast Great Mother Ocean seems to one born on Earth." And they see the Valley of the Peaks and sort of a big rock structure under there. And I find this interesting. What Wildfire says, "I wouldn't mind the size, pal, if it didn't stink of methane." So that's clearly
smell.
Yeah, I guess he's got a sense of smell somehow. There must be receptors in the suit.
Probably.
Yeah. So Quizlet says, "Ooh, bigger than big." And Wildfire says, "I agree with Quizlet for a change. You expect us to search all of that?" And Tellus says, "I don't think we have any choice. We came to investigate the disappearance of so many science police officers from across the galaxy. How can we fail to follow any information we have?" And... and so White Witch complains that it's all her magic can do to enable her to survive, let alone to actually figure all this stuff out. She says, "I hope some of our powers may prove more useful than that." And we see a little Gildishpan in a bowl watching
them. A very familiar Gildishpan.
Yes, yes. Surviving be much great goal, Legionnaires, waiting for this moment. For many star rises, Zemir has been. Yes, good old Zemir. So back in the fields at nightfall, Saturn Girl standing next to a female Fury from the looks of things. And she says, "A few more days like this and I may not have the strength to try to escape. Which means tonight better be the night. As soon as everyone else has gone in, it's time."
Okay, before you move on,
yeah,
the woman to the right of the female Fury looks like a very obscure Star Trek character, Lieutenant Emress from the animated series.
Oh, from the animated, yeah, the cat girl, right?
Oh, yep. Yeah. On the other side, we've got someone with Valkyrie's hairstyle, if not her hair color.
That's Artemis from Wonder Woman, who won't be created for another 10 years. I have no idea.
I'm thinking Valkyrie from The Defenders.
Yeah.
So she says it's time to strike, and she calls to Dream Girl and says, "Dream Girl, it's me, Saturn Girl. Recognize me?" And she says, "We must go to sleep now, friend." And so she Vulcan nerve pinches her.
Mm-hmm.
And
like you do,
and drags her out in the fields, in the moonlight and or the moon's light, as it were, and she says, "Damn you, Dreamy, you've been putting on weight." Oh, damn.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, seriously.
I would agree more. It's probably Saturn Girl is just out of conditioning.
Well, that you know, or maybe Dreamy's been working out. Muscle's heavy too. Sure. She says, "Yeah, you've been putting on weight, though heaven knows where." She says, "Either that or I'm out of training. Not too much further, though." She gets out through the cropping and sets her down, and she's basically gathered everyone together. She says, "We'll all be missed unless our keepers are even more careless than I'm hoping." She says, "There, Dreamy, you sleep off that hold for a while." And she says, "And I'm going to catch my breath." And we see Cam and Brainy piled in the corner. "Boys, when you come back to your senses and we get out of here, I'm going to collect on the favor you owe me for carrying you up here tonight."
Uh-huh.
She says, well, the moons are up, and I'm as rested as I can afford to get. Time to put my three little legionnaires in a row and break a rule I've lived by since I was a little girl. I'm sorry, my friends, I really am. I swore never to enter your minds without your consent, not to use my telepathy on you unasked, but these are special circumstances. She says, whoever has trapped us here has taken our minds away, and only I've managed to break free somehow and get mine back. I can't get you out of this prison without walls, and only my powers are my strength. I need your help and your teamwork, Legionnaires, and so she goes in.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, on Earth, in the presidential palace...
Ming the Merciless is vamping.
Yeah, seriously. Max von Sydow is chewing some scenery. Mm-hmm. We see Universo. He says it has all come together so perfectly after so long, but I was right to wait, to be patient. It has taken the building of entire worlds to suit my purposes, but I've succeeded. The Legion has finally been destroyed beyond repair, and the Earth is mine. And there's a knock at the door, and it is Mohaya Desai, who says, would tomorrow be satisfactory for the gathering of scientists you asked me to convene as the president of Earth? And he says, tomorrow? Yes, that'll do nicely, slave. And he says, thank you, master. And he says, I'm glad I have pleased you. And he says, you pleased me greatly, president. He says, you may continue to reign and bask in glory while I wait patiently in the shadows. Watch over my Earth carefully, Mohai Desai, and never forget who your master truly is. I've won. And this time, I'll not be beaten by the one man who has always let the Legion stand in my way, even though it took killing my own son. The Earth is mine. Well. Back in the fields. She's still trying to break in. And she kind of sees herself moving through through Jamie's mind. And she thinks it seems very strange. She says, all these people, strangers. She says, Starboy, no, it's some sort of multiple image of him. Maybe that has to do with how Dream Girl's power works, how she sees people in future time. That's neat.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a neat concept that she kind of sees people in sort of this superposition.
And she's also got, it looks like Brainy and Mon-El standing in her dream, too. Well, Brainy's face, and then Mon-El standing off to the side, so.
Interesting. So she sees all the defensive barriers, and then she sees Dreamy basically laying down on a jewel. She's what an ego, but there are the deep blocks, but she's twisted. Even that to be a jeweled cage. She's struggling inside it, trying to break free of the control, but her mind just doesn't have the training to do it, even if it is disciplined and strong. And there's a Krakum, take a drink.
Yay, finally. My God.
About time.
Yeah, we're only 24 pages in. And she wakes up. It's going
to be a very undrunk episode, kids.
She wakes up, and this is Dreamy. First thing she says, what's happened to me? These clothes.
These rags. What is this? Yeah. Polyester?
And so she says, you're safe, Dream Girl, at least for now. Sleep. Get back in touch with yourself, and I'll explain and apologize after I finish with the others. Mm-hmm. And so next she goes to Brainy. She says, strange, I always wanted to understand how your mind worked. So brilliant and so swift. I never thought I'd find out from the inside. And she says that his self-image is so strong, she can't even project hers in, except as a pulse of energy. And his mind seems to be a madhouse. Everything's happening so fast, even with the blocks in place. So much power, so much energy. He'll break through himself in another few days, even without any training in mental powers.
Uh-huh. I find it very sort of interesting. So, like on the previous page where we were looking at the, the blocks that Dreamy had in place, they had taken sort of like, a jewel or whatever. And in this, I mean, so I'm assuming that the center sort of nucleus is Brainy's psyche. And what are the blocks around it? Basically, computer components.
Yes.
The thing that would enslave him, is, a mind greater than his own, like Computo almost.
Yeah.
And then the little sort of flashes in there. Lyle Moore.
Totally. He's trying to work out the logic circuit to get around it. That's exactly what he's trying to do. So, yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? Yeah, you're right. Like invisible kids in there.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Well, Lyle, not Jacques. So
yes, sorry, yeah.
Just to clarify.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So she says, it won't take much to help him break free, just a little push in the right place. And there he is. And he says, and see, again, a different reaction, right? Dreamy's like, where are the clothes? And he's like, someone's been in my mind. And that's what freaks him out more than anything else, is that someone has been tampering with his mind. And so she gets him to sleep as well. And she says, I'll tell you all about it later after I finish with Chameleon Boy. And she says, I saved you for last. Stars alone know what your mind is like. And so in she goes into the Derlin brain. And again, something completely different.
So my take on this, like I say, I haven't read this in a while, but in preparation, I took a look at this. And the first thing that occurred to me that never had before is the sort of, so his consciousness, obviously in flux, you know, sort of almost a fluidity to it, but those spheres are very fixed. And I almost like look at those two black things.
Yeah.
Are those his input points? You know, are those basically the antenna through which his sensory perceptions come in? And then in the middle, they're beginning to coalesce, right, to form a shape around all this, you know, thing that's currently in flux. It's just fascinating artwork.
It really is. It's you know, there's some neat abstractions as to how the minds are set up that I find just fascinating. So she says nothing, or close to it anyway. No reality here, or at least none I can define. She says, I wonder how Derlins see the world with no fixed shape. Their perceptions must be so different from our human ones. And that makes me think of the whole idea of this would come up in 5 years later, where, you know, he takes a shot to the head and it doesn't matter because
I don't keep my brains there.
Yeah. I reorganize, you know, and the way he did it was like, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you reorganize your organs so that they're not in perceived vulnerable spaces? So she says, can I see through Cam's senses while I'm in here, or only see the abstractions that form his self-images? She says, I can't see out, but I'm starting to be able to shape his images to my comprehension. And yeah, and he's stuck in this little cube, you know, kind of like a frozen in stasis kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Interesting for a shapeshifter.
Exactly.
Yippers.
And, so she sees him, and she figures out how to crack this one. So she breaks it. There's a crack, followed by
the roadhouse. kicking it.
Followed by a crackoom.
Mm-hmm.
Take a drink.
Done and done.
Yes, and so he's like, Saturn girl, and she's like, yeah, all right, yeah. Shh. So I'll give you all the details telepathically. Bring each of you awake and up to date on our situation. So she fills them all in on everything that she knows and says, but please, let me do this my way. We don't have very much time before dawn. Listen to my mind carefully, and I'll tell you the trouble. We're all in, Legionnaires. But I swear to you, we've gotten this far, and together, we're getting off this damn prison world.
Yeah, we are.
Nice. What an awesome start to this.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice setup and a great, really Saturn Girl spotlight issue.
Yeah, it's been built. Yeah, totally. And you know, for sort of a look into the minds of some of her fellow Legionnaires, and you know, there's been bits of this that have been building for a while, for quite a while, in fact.
Yeah, all the missing SPs and heroes. Yep.
Yeah, and just the you know, the whole thing with Desai. Right. And and then here we are, and it's a great start, you know, just this, and like you say, like this idea that we don't know how long they've been under.
True.
And they don't know how long they've been under. Mm-hmm. But I love their varying reactions.
Oh yeah. One of my favorite things is, and it became a topic, I believe, in the letter columns back then, is why these four Legionnaires, and we'll get to that in future episodes for sure, but it was interesting. It's like, why would Universo pack off these four out of all the Legionnaires and send them off to, you know, summer camp in hell? So, you know.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things about this was why these guys? And, well, we sort of find out, but then it gets contradicted, and you know, it's interesting.
Oh, definitely. just on the just after the letter column, there is actually a how sad for Captain Atom.
Mm.
Followed by a house ad for the Shazam The New Beginning series by Roy and Dan Thomas with Tom Mandrake on art that I am apparently the only person in the world that enjoyed it. Me and Roy, that's it. That's all.
Yeah, that didn't last long, did it?
It was a four-issue miniseries, and then they Legends came around and they kind of co-opted him. They took some of the concepts that came out in it, like the idea that Billy's brain was always in control.
Yeah.
And so they kind of left that in for when they used him in Justice League. Mm-hmm. So the idea, the concepts of it lasted, but... You know, and I can't really say I blame Roy and Dan Thomas too much, because the reality is it's been a tough go for any kind of Captain Marvel series.
Yeah, or anything, you know, Golden Age that, you know, Roy Thomas is trying to maintain at that point.
Well, yeah, that too. You know, he did he made one little reference to Earth-S in it, where it was kind of where Shazam, when the wizard is talking to Billy...
Right. That way lies madness.
That's right. Yes. Because he says, you know, like he feels like he's done this before, and but that was in another place, and that way lies madness, and so I thought that was a neat nod to you know what all that had changed.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was some neat stuff in there, and there was some neat ideas. Like I say, the idea of the child's mind being in control. You know, it's not like he has the wisdom of Solomon, but he's still a little boy.
Aww.
And that's why John likes Oreos.
Oh. I love Oreos too much.
There you go. There you go. So did Billy Batson, who introduced them to Mr. Jones.
True.
And there you had it. All right. Has anyone got anything else to add about this issue?
No, I think I'm good.
A quick little personal note. Yeah. I mentioned this. So just like I say, haven't read this in years and years, going through the letter column. Very first letter is by a buddy of mine. It's absolutely insane. This is, you know, like cool. A 30-year-old issue, and I met that guy like 2 years ago. So, Chris Barbie, I see your letter.
Nice. And I noticed Barry Elijah is at the is the last letter in that in the column as well.
Who's that now?
I see his name a lot.
Oh, Barry Ladd.
I see his name a lot. In fact, commenting on posts that Paul Levitz makes. So, and I've seen him in the LSH on the LSH page on Facebook as well. I was going to say, hey, wait a second, that's not the last letter at all. But I've already put the other issue behind this one, and. And now I had picked up issue 2 of this. And I know it's chapter 2 because it says so on the cover.
I'm a little disappointed, honestly. When you invited me on to discuss Forgotten Heroes, I assumed this was going to be an Animal Man, you know, a mortal man.
We can talk about them. Rip Hunter's one of them. yes, the Forgotten Heroes, yeah. Oh, good stuff. Ah. All right. Let's wrap this up then, shall we?
Woohoo!
Comments, as always, are welcome to legionofsubstitutepodcasters@gmail.com. You can join the conversation on our Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. We are on the Twitter. We are LOSP Podcast. And in addition to all these things, you can head over to our website, legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com, and you can leave a comment on this or any episode. And with that, we make our way back into the time bubble. Minds are a little fuzzy. I don't know. And hopefully we'll wake up in the right century. And we will see you all next week.
Filthy, filthy monkey.